Here today, gone today. The pace of change can be confusing. Then again, it can be inspiring. Every year, Harvard Business School Executive Education helps executives like you build the self-confidence and decision-making skills it takes to thrive on change. Fight change with change. Go. Start by going to hbs.me/go. That's hbs.me/go.
We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I've been talking about books that have been released this week. My friend David Swinson, who is a remarkable man, has also released his new book called Trigger. If you're not familiar with David's writing, let me tell you, you're missing out on his character, Frank Marr. We're going to be talking about that in just a few minutes, but I want to remind you there are other books that are out this week too. A Killer's Alibi by William Myers Jr., which I read and spoke to Bill the other night. Fantastic book. You really got to go and check that out. And then there are a couple others. There's Women's Fiction by Melissa McClone, A Little Bit of Engaged, and some great paranormal by L. Rossi called Marked Before Dawn. In the meanwhile, let me tell you about David Swinson. He's an amazing guy. He's a police officer who became a detective. He was plainclothes and undercover. He targeted narcotics and crimes in progress. He was an investigator who covered everything from burglary to armed robbery to homicide. He's been honored by, I don't even know how many different places that he's been honored. He's just gotten award after award for his community service, for his investigative abilities. Target Corporation said what a great guy he was. I am thrilled to have back on Authors on the Air my friend David Swinson. Hey, David, welcome back to Authors on the Air.
Thank you. It's great to be here again.
It's been about a year since I last talked to you, although we did see each other at VoucherCon, which was fun.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll get to see each other in the summer at Thriller Fest, which will be fun too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it occurs to me that you have this kind of really long and windy, interesting career that started in the early 80s. And we talked about this before because you had been a film major, but you also were a promoter for clubs for punk rock and alternative music in Long Beach, California. You kind of promoted in a lot of these different really hot clubs out there. But you also had a very interesting friendship with Hunter Thompson and Dr. Timothy Leary and John Waters and Jim Carroll. And I remember talking to you about that and thinking, you're one of the most interesting persons I've ever had the pleasure of speaking to. Well, it's true. You've had such an interesting life that has covered so many different things. You are immersed in culture, whether it's spoken word, whether it's music, whether it's film, whether it's writing. And then there's this other side of you that has had an amazing dedication to law enforcement. It seems like they couldn't mix because of the counterculture that you were friends with. How did that change your worldview because of the 80s and who you know then, David? How did that change your worldview and still motivate you to become a law enforcement officer?
Well, actually, that whole life was purely accidental. I didn't know John Waters that much. I booked a couple of shows with him, speaking engagements, but I did get to know Tim Leary and Hunter S. Thompson, well. I think You mean how did it change my life view as far as when I became a cop and how?
Yeah, and a writer.
Yeah, I mean,
it
changed it a lot. I mean, being immersed in counterculture and the whole punk rock thing, and I wasn't a punk rocker, but I loved the music. And oddly enough, I did also were two other things I wanted to be in life, and that was get into law enforcement and be a writer. But when I became a cop, I think, you know, all that from the 80s, you know, really taught me how to think, you know, creatively and a little bit outside of how most cops would normally do things. And so I did things a little bit, I mean, it's a common term, but I did things pretty much outside the box.
Well, you really did. But you wanted to write too, and you were really mm-hmm. into all of these creative pursuits. Even though you were the promoter, you still were involved in creative pursuits and filmmaking and things like that. Because weren't you a film major in school?
Yeah, and I originally thought that I would be a screenwriter, producer, but then got caught up in the alternative music punk rock scene and everything changed.
It did. But, you know, every time I've spoken to someone who said, oh, I wanted to be a screenwriter, and then they said, wow, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. But I bet you that that is how you learn to economize the words in your books. Your stories are very gritty. They feel so real to me. And maybe it's because you've been there, done that. But you also have that film school background that taught you to write sparingly. Do you think that made a difference?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've always been a visual person. And I mean, I think also I look at music visually too. I mean, so I think music and the whole music scene and, you know, that whole scene in the 80s and getting into the music, like everyone from Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds to, you know,
right.
Pixies and all that, you know, changed my life. And, but when I became a cop, specifically a detective, that changed everything. It, you know, obviously I saw things and experienced things most people would never experience. And that really, I think, shaped me and honed my skills as a writer more than anything. But I'm so glad for what I went through in the 80s and who I met, because I think that's where I learned. And I'm not trying to give myself accolades, far from that, but I think that's where I learned, I developed a certain empathy for, you know,
Upstanding citizen, the upstanding, you know,
yeah.
Snooty citizen. You saw a wide range of people.
Yeah.
And you understood that things could, you know, people could be essentially good, but they were flawed, right?
Yeah, and that's what Frank Marr is, exactly. And so, you know, and I developed relationships with extremely flawed people, and not only in the 80s, who are still, many of them are still my friends, and they're, you know, they've moved on to very successful careers, but in the 80s, they were very flawed. You know, obviously Hunter, you know, probably the most
sure
broken, flawed man I've ever met. But we weren't, you know, like, it was a very business relationship. I met Hunter through a friend of mine, who's still my friend, Bill Stanky, who's a manager, and he managed the college engagements for Hunter Thompson and Tim Leary. And
wow.
So I ended up booking a lot of shows throughout like a couple year period for Hunter. But, you know, it's like if you were to condense that time, the years into hours, it's only hours that I knew him, but those hours were significant, you know?
Sure.
And, I mean,
they were profound.
Really, he influenced me. And he's really, Frank Marr is nothing like Hunter. He could never be like Hunter, but I know that Hunter Thompson wanted to be wanted to be the sheriff of Woody Creek, Colorado. So I thought of, like, what if there was this guy, like, who actually did become a cop, but he was like a younger Hunter Thompson, like when he was writing mm-hmm. rum diaries or something like that. And so that's really how Frank Marr came about. But he's nothing like Hunter, just inspired by him.
Let's talk about Frank, because this is the third book I think you've written about him. Is that right?
The last, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the last. So Frank is he's really having a hard time. He's barely clean, and you know, he's an alcoholic, and he's trying to get his act together, and he gets a call that his best friend has been shot and killed by what seems to be
his best friend shot and killed something.
Has shot and killed a young African-American boy who seems not to have had any fault in this at all. So Frank's kind of in a bad place. He's in a bad place personally, but professionally, you know, he's also in a bad place. He wants to support his friend, but, you know, he wants to know the truth of what happened in this investigation, in this mm-hmm. matter, rather, this shooting, this killing. Is part of this book, the third book with Frank, is part of this a little bit about redemption, do you think?
Well, for him, yeah. But, you know, it is also, I just want to say beforehand that, you know, there have been several shootings, you know, across the country.
Of course.
Where they're officer related and then the gun's not found. But the fortunate thing for the officers involved in those shootings is there was rounds recovered where it showed that, you know, that the officer was fired upon, or there was video
right.
surveillance, or, you know, witnesses or whatever. In this case with Al Luna, there's none of that and there's no gun. So it's like, it's impossible. It's an impossible task. And so I wanted to put him in a position like that impossible type of task, but, and he's got a lot of moral ambiguity, but so what is he going to do, you know, at the end, you know, if it ends up not looking too good for his friend.
Right.
So that's really
it's a bad spot. It's a rock
yeah.
and a hard place for Frank Marr yeah. because, he wants to help his friend who's helped him, but he also wants to do the right thing. And so I would imagine
yeah.
that, even in real life, that's a difficult situation for any police officer.
You know, I mean, there's I don't know any cop that gets up in the morning and has it in his head or her head where, you know, I'm going to shoot somebody today, you know.
Right.
And, you know, there are so many shootings, most of them are justified. Some are found not to be, and I don't even like the word justified, are found not to be good shootings.
Right.
Throughout my career, I've known a lot of officers that have been involved in shootings. I've been fortunate enough that I've come close, but I have not. And it changes lives. It does change the good officer's life who did something they didn't want to do but had to, and it changes mm-hmm. the life of the person, the family, obviously, of the person
sure.
that was killed, and you know, so it's just there's a lot of gray area, and I think that's what I want
yes,
to really
I'm
get
sure.
into. Yeah, here.
Did you make
that's
a conscious
not,
decision
not
to write? This particular storyline because of how many shootings that we've heard in the news. And granted, and I'll say this, I'm a huge law enforcement fan. For those of you who are listening, you know, I was a victim of a violent crime and the police saved my life, so I have nothing but gratitude for law enforcement. It is a very timely and topical subject. It's very, very touchy to a lot of people. Did you know that and appreciate that going into writing that the story?
I actually knew I wanted to do something about this for a while, but then bring it to head was what was going on. I mean, the fact is that really, if you look, and I'm not an expert here about statistics and all that, but if you do look at officer-related shootings throughout the years, there's really not an escalation. What changed everything, and this is what interested me, was the smartphones and the ability to
social
capture
media. Sure.
Social media, but the ability to capture live thing. And
right.
Both those things are to the benefit of the officer that was involved in. And again, there's no good shooting. Lost life either way is terrible.
It's still a lost life, right.
But smartphones caught shootings and caught some very awful shootings. So,
right.
But then it became such a media, attention media, that it looked like this was like an epidemic.
An epidemic of cop shooting, sure.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been on the department for a lot of years. And, you know, it's on our department and the departments I worked with, it's not like that at all. I mean, but it can appear that it is because it's like all over, you know, YouTube.
It's everywhere.
You
sure.
know, all picked over the news and all this. And it's, you know, not really, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear you. I understand that. This is the third and last book for Frank Marr. Have you thought about what you're going to do next, David?
Well, I'd like to break away from, I mean, Trigger sort of opens up to a new, and I got another three-book deal with Mulholland Little Brown. For another two-book series and then, you know, one standalone. But Trigger actually opens up to a new series with the partnership that he develops.
Ah.
But I do not want it to be a Frank Marr book. And
right.
So it will not be like Frank Marr, you know, first person, you know, present
right.
tense, you know, it'll be, you know, third person. And Frank will just be a character. He's not going to be the lead guy. I don't want to get rid of him, but I'd like to keep the partnership and explore the partnership because, again, as
sure.
going back to as a cop, you know, I mean, I had partnerships like the one he fell into and Trigger, and he literally did fall into it. And with guys that you worked with as CIs or bad guys that you really liked, and certainly I never put them in the trunks of my car and tried to kill them, like in the first book. But I mean, Calvin is based on so many of those kids I knew that I actually really
right.
liked, and so Marr gets the opportunity to work with them, and that's pretty freaking cool, man. And
it
so
is.
I sort of like, yeah, I want to explore that.
It's an interesting dynamic. I think Calvin is kind of a compilation of all those people you probably knew during your career,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so he's great. I'm thrilled for you. You've gotten such accolades on this book, and, you know, I told you I have a bunch of copies. I'm going to be giving one away. So
cool.
as soon as this is finished, I'm going to say, hey, you know, give me a shout out, and I'm going to send a David Swenson book. And have you started writing the next story, or you're just now kicking off your book tour?
Well, yeah, I'm pretty much, you know, geared up for the launch of Trigger
right.
and what's involved with that, with the marketing and stuff. But I have been writing, yeah, and I'd like to get something out in the next couple of years.
You'll get it out within a year. I know you.
I don't know. I wish I could be one of those writers. I truly do. Because there's so many brilliant writers like that. Joe Ide. You know.
I love Joe.
Gosh, I mean, so many guys that can just crank out. Not even crank. That's a terrible word. Just put out incredible. Michael Connelly.
I know.
Incredible books. you know, because they're writing machines. I mean, I wish I could be a writing machine, and I wish I could be disciplined but like that, and I'm just really not.
Well, you know, the proof is in the pudding. The book is magnificent. All your books have been.
Thank you.
I mean, you know, I fell in love with your writing after the book two and had to go back and then get book one. So, you know, there's no denying that you're a great writer, and I'm thrilled that you came
Thank
back
you.
To talk to me. I will see you in New York at Thriller Fest, but in the meantime, yes. Tell everybody where they can find you on the web, David.
That's really easy. It's davidswinson.com, and I do answer my emails personally. Obviously, I'm not even if I were to that point, I'd still answer them. But also on Twitter, David Swinson, or I go under Case Jackets on Twitter, and then on Facebook, I can be found on Facebook as well, and Instagram.
And David's really responsive, by the way, to his readers. So, you know, pop by and tell him you like his book. David Swinson, the book is called Trigger. It is available now in brick and mortar and online at all your favorite retailers. Please get the book and please leave a nice review. If you don't like the book, just say, I don't like the book. It's not my cup of tea, but, you know, don't be a troll, right? We don't want
yeah.
any trolls. We just want people that will give us an honest opinion when we read. David Swinson, I am thrilled that you came back, and I look forward to talking
to you
when the next book comes out. Have a great day, and thanks for being with me. And thanks, listeners, for being with me, too. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Bye, all. Bye, David.
Here today, gone today? The pace of change can be confusing. Then again, it can be inspiring. Every year, Harvard Business School Executive Education helps executives like you build the self-confidence and decision-making skills it takes to thrive on change. Fight change with change. Go. Start by going to hbs.me/go. That's hbs.me/go.